Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Good evening, this is Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd. Welcome to No Nonsense Nancy out there on our chat room. And Red, are you with me yet?
I'm here. I'm with you.
Well, I need to switch out to my headset on the speakers. I was sitting there listening to it on my speakers and didn't realize that I hadn't switched around. So now I can hear you in my ears. My co-host tonight is Red Beckman, our guy that just won't quit. This guy been fighting a freedom battle since, 50s, Red?
Yeah. Yes.
I don't see that that our guest is on with us yet, Red. So how about we open up in prayer? I'll say it tonight.
Go for
Gracious
it.
Father God. We're just so thankful for all the ways that you've blessed us throughout the history of this country. And right now we come before you humbly, and it's obvious that so many of us have allowed ourselves to be deceived and have believed a lot of lies, and so many of us have turned our hearts against you. And it seems that you may have turned your eyes away from this country because of the way that we have conducted ourselves. And we ask for your forgiveness, Father, and we ask for your mercy on this great country and the republic that you gifted us. We ask that you be with us this night on the show and that you help us to disseminate the truth. And if there's any non-truth, we ask that that you show us that and you reveal it and you shut it down. I ask for your healing hand to be on my friend Red Beckman. And Father, we just ask for your spirit to fill us. Thank you so much for your son, Jesus. Amen. Well, Red, how's your week been?
Busy. Busy, busy, busy. It is, there's such an acceleration. There's just a flood of information coming down, and there are people just literally coming out of the woodwork looking for information. And they're listening. They're paying attention. And as long as the economy was great and everything was moving along smooth, why, they didn't need us who were trying to raise the red flags and the warnings. They didn't want to listen, but boy, I'll tell you, now they're listening. And it's a major responsibility on our part to do what we can to communicate the truth to our fellow Americans. They are listening. They want to hear the truth. And so we have a responsibility to see that they have access to the truth. It's a great time to be alive.
Well, Red, I believe our guest is on with us. I'd like to introduce to everyone Steve Pattison of the Citizens for a Constitutional Republic. And Steve, are you there?
I sure am. Can you hear me okay?
Hear you loud and clear. That's a great reception. It's always good to have somebody with a nice, clear line where it's not breaking up on you. Well, Steve, how about you give us a little bit of a synopsis of who you are so our listeners have a little idea what your background is and where you're coming from tonight.
Well, I'm going to try to make this short and sweet. I grew up on a farm boy, learned to think for myself, and had common sense, and went to college, found out the teachers weren't teaching me anything other than was in the books, and I went from there to going to school as a computer programmer, and then I ended up being a financial planner, insurance agent, and Series 7 licensed stockbroker. And by 1976, I figured out the stock market was rigged, didn't know exactly how it was done. You know, I had a family, too, married for several years, and until about 1992, 93, when my brother called me and asked me to go to this meeting about taxes not being required to be filed by the people. And I told him he was crazy. And he said, well, I'll pay your fee. So he paid my fee, and I went down to Springfield, Missouri, and went to this class and bought the books, came home for about 6 months, read all the Internal Revenue Code, and connected the dots. And then I asked myself, why doesn't more people understand that the people that live in the 50 states, born and raised there, are not required to file taxes? And I ran into another young man. I was reading the book No More or something to that effect. And him and I and my son and another gentleman got to doing research, going back in history, trying to figure out why doesn't the people know this, you know? And we came across that they actually are required to file because they've all declared themselves to being citizens of the United States, which today really means that you're a territorial citizen, a subject under the federal Congress, and the only rights you have is what they provide to you through the 14th Amendment, and they can take them away at any time they want to or ignore them or whatever, and you don't have standing with them because the current federal representatives and senators do not represent the people. They represent the people that place the current Constitution in effect, which we discovered in 1869. The Missouri Constitution, second one, was placed in by a set of people that were not people within the inhabitants of Missouri, but someone else. So it was their constitution, but they put a second parallel government in place. Now, that would have been a seditious act or sedition and treasonous act, but they didn't replace the first constitution. In other words, they didn't do anything illegal. They just put another one in force that supposedly was going to provide the rights to these new 14th Amendment citizens that were created for the alleged slaves at that point, so that they would have freedom in all the 50 states or the 20-some states that were in effect in the 1860s. And that's where they actually changed the definition in Congress, as the person was then a United States citizen. Well, we also found out about common law and where the attorneys were being misled on what civil law, which I believe is a misnomer because it's civil codes. It is not a law, because all the civil is for subjects, so they're codes for the individual that's under the jurisdiction of whoever. And we more or less figured out that the common law was actually the only law that was established in our country, and that when these people did this, they did it and created a government de facto, which means the government in fact, because they supposedly, after the Civil War, the lawful state governments were all broke to some extent or something like that. They just more or less hoodwinked everybody into taking a new oath to vote into this new corporations or new governments that were by a second then later on, the third or fourth Constitution. And it just blew me away. I mean, I sat down after reading about Khazars and who these people were that was doing this since for the last 2,000 years. I had one drink after another drink and say, now what the heck do we do? So that's how I got to where I am today.
Well, now, one of the people that you ran across during your research was Dan Meador, is that correct?
Dan Meador.
Meador?
Yes. I had, when I started doing research on the income tax and figured out that, you know, all the definitions in the code for 26 is only determined for the territorial states, and it does not define any of the 50 states in 26 whatsoever, except under the oil excise taxes, which actually say the 50 states. So that led me to believe that, well, then the people that live in the 50 states are exempt from the income taxes. So I started calling, you know, everybody that had a website, everybody that was doing anything about income taxes, and Dan Meador was one of those people. And we went down with a couple different times and met with Dan and exposed him to the common law information that we found, because when we learned about common law, well, we wanted to determine, well, when did that start in our country, and, you know, where's the lawful entity that created and so forth. And we found that back in, I believe, 1774, the people at that point adopted common law in all the colonies as the law of the land. And common law was always known as the law of the land. Civil codes were all the law of the sea, more or less contracts to some extent, or subjects. And that's where we put all that together, and I gave that to Dan with a book about it, and all of a sudden, everything he wrote after that, he had common law involved in it, and was doing a really good job on it. I was involved in a couple different telephone conversations like this one right here with him, and he says, well, the biggest thing we got to do is educate all the people that they don't have standing because they've all declared themselves to be subjects to the newly formed second constitution. Even the federal constitution is a second constitution placed in by someone other than the people. And that's why we don't have standings to win in their courts, because they're all de facto, and they all believe that we are citizens of the United States, which means territorial citizens in no way, shape, or form. And you can go to Sixth Law Black Dictionary, edition 6, that talks about a court case that talked about United or a government de facto, and that it's not the lawful government that was created by the Founding Fathers, which, at that point in my life, I kind of wondered, you know, this is kind of like if I'd heard about a family where this young man, the husband or the father and mother had died in a car accident. He went over to his house afterwards and found this file. He was looking for the wills and stuff to close up his parents' estate, found this envelope hidden away, and he pulled it out, and it was a newspaper clipping about a child that had been stolen at birth, that the date on the newspaper was about the same time that his date of birth was, which he wondered, well, were these two people really my parents? And that's what I've kind of woken up. This government is really not our government. It's so scary and unbelievable that, you know, most people don't even want to talk about it. But they got to, because if we don't, we're going down this slippery slide of the North American Union, and that's going to be just horrifying as far as I'm concerned. So that's where I got.
Well, Steve, I want you to get acquainted with Mr. Red Beckman. Red had also had contact with Dan Meador.
Over a period of, you know, several years. I don't think I ever met him. I may have, but I don't remember for sure. But I knew of him as being a very effective researcher. That was his game. He was He was just a born researcher. He loved to delve into history and the law books, and he was able to found a lot of things that needed to be addressed, and of course he wasn't alone. But in the freedom movement, there's a certain number of people like Dan, and basically this is their gift. This is their avocation, is to study and history and the law books and such, and see what has happened in the past. And of course, you don't do much of that research without coming to the conclusion that we had an awful lot of crooks in political office all over the country. And so one thing we know is that today, with all of the outlaws that we've got in government, this is nothing new. This has been going on ever since the Constitution was ratified back there and the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights was attached to the Constitution in December of 1791. And at that time already, there were those that were trying to scheme and conspire, or whatever you want to call it, to make the system break down. They wanted it to break down. They didn't like our freedom, we the people having this freedom. There's always been those people that they've got a mental weakness where they think that they are better mentally, stronger and wiser than the average out there, and that they were, that's where the divine right of kings idea came from. The divine right of kings, the king said, well, he had a divine right to rule and govern the little people. And of course, our history, I spent quite a bit of time back in 1985 when we were trying to put together the books, The Law That Never Was. I spent the law library at the University of Montana, and I was reading copies of the Congressional Record, and I was just absolutely appalled, because back there in the 1800s, we are given to believe that we had some really outstanding, public servants all through our history. Well, we had some outstanding personalities, but boy, they were outstanding in an evil kind of way, in a criminal standpoint. And we had lots and lots and lots of them back then. And
who was the first one that you identified in our history as being the biggest corrupt person?
Oh boy, Alexander Hamilton, of course, apparently was a representative for the Rothschilds in Europe. There was quite a bit of friction between Thomas Jefferson and Alexander Hamilton. There were all through those years, we went through some real constitutional crises in the first 50 years after the Constitution was formed. And, of course, the English had a great deal to do with that. They burnt all of Washington, D.C. in 1812, and the reason they did that was because they wanted to destroy as many of the founding documents as they could. And
they
did. What?
What else did they burn in 1812?
Oh, my goodness.
It was a city.
Yeah, they burnt the city.
I'm talking about they burnt to Chicago.
Well, I don't think that was 1812, was it?
I think that was about 1814 or 15.
Yeah.
It was in the War of 1812, but it was a couple of years afterwards.
Yeah, it was afterwards. And, of course, you see, there were some military invasions coming down from the Canadian side. They were rather insignificant, I guess, because they don't take, you know, there's not that much recorded about them.
Do you understand why important Chicago was?
Well, I know how important it is today.
Did you know that Metro was created there?
What?
Did you know that Metro was created there?
Oh, yes. 1313 Chicago, of course, was a very... that was an evil address, as far as I was concerned. And it hasn't improved with... It was the incubator for Obama, of course, there. And so I've spent quite a bit of time in Chicago. We had an office there, and I spent quite a bit of time there, and it's not my favorite city, I'll guarantee you that.
Well, Chicago is where they actually created the invisible government through.
Oh, yeah. It probably... I think that there were people working in New York, of course, as well as Chicago. There were always those who were trying to subvert and get the Constitution, the intent of the Constitution. They just absolutely refused to accept the intent of the Constitution, which was to make the people sovereign and the government a servant. And that was, I mean, it's just in that plain of language.
Red, are you familiar with Executive Order 11647?
Well, I'm aware of a lot of them, but I don't remember the numbers on them.
Okay, if the people out there are listening, if they go to search for my website, which you should have been notified, go to the Invisible Government, you'll find the executive order that actually created Metro, which is the 10 districts over top of the 48 states that started in 1970.
Regional government.
Right. And they had capitals for each of the districts, which are actually states, and there's a constitution that goes along with it. So
yeah,
that is just another example of putting constitution over top of constitution over constitution that created a new government layer upon layer over and above the lawful constitution. And each of those constitutions have slaves or subjects to them, and the only people that are free are under the original constitutions that were all pre-1861, which is in my Missouri research under my web pages, which shows that they did not define the people that created the second and third and fourth constitutions. It did not say that they were the people inhabiting Missouri,
yeah,
for example.
Back in the 70s, we had a lot of information available about regionalism. There were a couple of small tabloid newspapers in the country that were put out by researchers who were researching this, and of course in Montana they changed their state constitution 1973, if I remember right, and they called it the New States Constitution, and of course it was bad news. It was bad news for the people of Montana. And some of the problems have been corrected because they did give us the initiative process They didn't want to give us the initiative process, but there were some people in the Constitutional Convention, Montana Constitutional Convention, that insisted strongly enough to the point where we got the initiative process, and there's been some of it that has been changed through the initiative process. Right at the moment, there's an initiative petition that is getting signatures in Montana, and they've got to be in sometime in June, if I remember right, and it is to restore the grand juries, because the new state's constitution in the early 70s made it so that the only way you could get a grand jury is if a district judge was to order the impaneling of a grand jury. And as a result, we just didn't have any more grand juries. They were gone. But they're trying to correct that.
Charles, or Red, do you
yeah.
understand this is going to all be fixed in a matter of months? Because they're operating underneath that Tim's district constitution, and they have no standing to do anything, a petition or anything. They're just going to be ignored, just like Charles or Bob Schultz is being ignored for his standing, because he keeps declaring himself a citizen of the United States, which is a subject to those constitutions after the constitutions for all the states pre-1861.
Yeah, well, if the initiative passes in Montana, it won't be ignored. I'll guarantee you that. Not in the political climate
that is in the
state of Montana right now.
It'll be ignored because there's no standing there, and no matter what happens, we're still going to end up with the North American Union next.
There is still some effort to bring about the. American Union, and it may happen. Wait until some more of those Texans down there get mad. It's happening. I have a lot of friends in Texas, and they had the superhighway theoretically shut off. But Governor Perry, of course, he's working behind the scenes. He's not bad. He's not good news. He's bad news. Anyway, he's now saying that he is supporting the sovereignty resolutions and such that they're working on. Well, we have to wait and see whether he's
Fred. The problem with that is he has no standing. He's a governor of a de facto government.
I know that. But I also know that this de facto government is there, and the de facto government doesn't really have any standing. And when you confront these people with the law, they back off in a hurry. I've seen it happen. I sued a federal judge in 1993. And the case was docketed with the U.S. Supreme Court in August of 96. The Solicitor General noticed the parties to the action in December of 96 and he was not going to oppose me. He recognized that I was 100% correct. I was using the Organic Constitution and Bill of Rights, and when you hit them with it, they know what you're talking about.
Red, I never used the term Bill of Rights because it's not a bill or a list of rights.
I know all that argument, and most of it, I don't give it any credence whatever, because a lot of this is stuff that people have put together, these scoundrels that want to get rid of our Constitution, our organic law. They want to get rid of it, but they really don't have. You see, they do have the press. When you consider who owns the press, why, then you can understand this. But and, of course, they have, they have brain damaged the students in our schools And so we've got a lot of work to do to remedy that. But it's in the process of happening right now. It's happening as we're speaking because the American people are they're being damaged so severely with this economic holocaust that we've got going on, and they haven't seen nothing yet. It's going to get a hell of a lot worse. And when these Americans, when they get mad, they don't get mad easy. But when they do, watch out. And well, go ahead.
Terry?
Gentlemen, we're up against a half-hour break. Can you hang in there for just a couple of minutes? We'll be right back.
Yeah, I want to talk to you next, Terry.
Okay.
Faith of our fathers living still in spite of dungeon fire and sword. Oh, how our hearts beat high with joy whene'er we hear that glorious word.
Faith of our fathers, holy faith, we will be true to thee till death.
Our fathers chained in prisons dark were still in heart and conscience free. How sweet would be their children's faith if they, like them, could die.
Well, welcome back to Walls in Our Minds. Our guest tonight is Steve Pattison. Steve, you wanted to talk to me?
Right. Did you send forward to Red our first case that we won within 10 days?
I don't know that I did.
I didn't see that.
I did send him the link to your website.
Well, it's not on my website. That was a special attachment I had sent to you. His name was... Oh, God, I can't think of it right offhand now. Glenn Hughes. He had been in court for 2 years fighting the IRS to turning his books over to them so they could file, willfully not filing income taxes and steal everything that he ever had. And he told the judge that he would turn it over to him, and when we talked to him 2 days later, and he told me the judge had told him that he was going to throw him in jail if he didn't turn his books over. I said, well, I don't think the judge would have said that to you. And he went back and checked the transcript and found that the judge said, I may have to put you in jail. So that was a You know, these judges know what they're doing. And this guy was representing himself as a, you know, live human being and or a live man rather than a person as defined in the Internal Revenue Code. And this all goes back to the system that was created clear back in Babylon that the Rothschilds brought and tried to place in America. And one of the things that the Rothschild brothers said back in 1861, or 680, I guess 1863, which was what they were trying to do to our country, because, you know, Jackson, President Jackson had shut down the banks time after time. And he said, or the brothers said, the few who understand the system will either be so interested in its profits or be so dependent upon its favors that there will be no opposition from that class. While on the other hand, the great body of people mentally incapable of comprehending the tremendous advantages the capital derives from the system will bear its burden without complaint and perhaps without even suspecting the system is intimate to their interest. And the system is what was put in place that's destroying us all. And when they finally passed the 13th or the Federal Reserve Act, where they get allowed to eventually print money out of thin air after 1962, with having nothing backing it whatsoever, is where they caused inflation beyond rapport, which is what Jefferson talked about with all the corporations and the banks growing up around the country that would make our people homeless. And that's what's happening today. And the only thing that we have found that's going to stop them is the last paragraph in the introduction that's to the alumni of the law department of Columbia, which is in the front page of my website. And if you go to the last page, and I'm trying to get my computer to go there, the last page says that when the United Colonies met in Congress in 1974, they claimed the common law of England as a branch of those indubious rights and liberties to which the respective colonies are entitled. And common law, like the silent preventive, is still the preserver of our liberties. We've used common law four times now, have won within days after we're issuing that either directly outside the court to the judge or sending it to the court as a judicial notice. And they did not prosecute, or they dismissed within days. And we feel that this type of documentation will go a long way to reinstalling the lawful state governance pre-1861 so that we can actually restore the federal government so that we can get on with our lives and go out and, you know, smell the flowers and have a good time rather than what we've been as slaves for the last, you know, 200 years. And that's what I want to get to the point where all these people like Red and the other groups need to sit down and have a telephone conference where we talk about what has worked every time and how it will work to reinstall the state governments, because those state governments are still there pre-1861. The ones after 1861 are going to have to be brought in as lawful state governments, because they were all thinking when it happened after 1861 that they were lawful state sovereign governments, but they weren't, because the people did not place them into the Constitution in or the government after 1861, because it was all done under sedition and as far as we're concerned, treasonous acts. And if it continues, we have to notify them under common law that their actions are under sedition, that they need to do these things to restore the lawful state government so that we can restore the lawful federal government so that we can get on with our lives rather than paying this tremendous amount of interest to a group of bankers that owns the Federal Reserve that prints money out of thin air and gets paid, you know, 5, 6, 10% interest on all that money that was fictitiously earned, which is just part of the system that was created by them to monopolize us. Have either one of you ever read the congressional records of the income tax that was reported in the, I think it was 1999 tax flat, or flat tax reform act?
No, not me.
I don't think there's anybody in the country that has won the cases that I have, starting way back. And we won cases in Montana in 1980. The Internal Revenue Service lost 4 out of 5 prosecutions that they had in the federal courts in Montana in 1980. We're talking about 30 years ago. And I got $145,000 out of them in a case in 96. Of course, it was my money, but they had to return it with interest. And so you see, I'm not a stranger to this. I'm not a Johnny come lately.
Red,
I've got a bunch.
Aren't.
What?
Red, I'm not saying you aren't. But the problem
what you're saying that we've got to get together and take a look at what you've got, and I know what you've got. We went through this way back in the 70s, and so what we're doing at this point in time, we're whipping the tax court. The tax court doesn't have a chance. The tax court is going to be put totally out of business.
Red, the question I have is, if the IRS folds up tomorrow, what difference is that going to be for the economy and what's going on today?
Well, we're in such a desperate situation right now. But you see, it's when you cut a tree down, you know it's one piece of sawdust at a time coming out of that saw cut. And when we start winning these cases, now we had a case just last week out of Texas. The fellow, I found out about it the day before. He was supposed to go to court the next morning. The IRS and the Justice Department had filed an order. They wanted to have an order to show cause. They wanted the judge to cite this guy for contempt and send him to jail. And, of course, that was on Friday. I didn't find out about it. Some friends of his called me on Thursday afternoon. And all we could do was kind of give the guy some clues, and he went into court on Friday. And he gave the judge a little bit of information, and the judge backed off right quick. And the reason the judge backed off was that all the guy did was told the judge, said, "You are a government employee. You are a party to the action because you are an agent of the federal government. And you are making findings of fact and conclusions of law, and you have a very serious, undeniable conflict of interest." And that did it. And I think this guy, because I don't know how many there are, in Montana we have an electrical engineer. He was a long-time non-filer. He made a lot of money. He worked overseas a great deal. And back here about 4 or 5 years ago, they were going to send him off to the Hooskow. They were going to nail him. He sent them one letter, and that stopped it right there. Federal judges are government agents. They have a conflict of interest in all controversies between a citizen and the government. And when you cite them for that, they can't deny it. They cannot deny it. And this, you know, there's so much of what is going on that is so complicated, and the people themselves, you know, they really can't defend themselves with all of it because it is so complicated for them. When you cut it down, get rid of the complications and just go with the very basic facts. When you go with the basic facts, they can't handle it. The Seventh Amendment is by far the most powerful of all of the 10 articles of the Bill of Rights, because
Red, I don't disagree with what you're saying. All I'm saying is that we could be here for another 100 years doing and fighting the IRS and winning a whole bunch of cases, but that still doesn't mean that we're going to get back our lawful state government so that we can have a lawful federal government like it should have been in the beginning, or like it was in the beginning. And we've got a plan of doing that where we don't have to fight the IRS. We don't have to fight the judges. We have to reinstall and get the people to understand that they've been hoodwinked into believing that they're a U.S. citizen, which is a 14th Amendment citizen today, and they do not have any rights guaranteed by any constitution. They have no standing in any of those courts. At any time, the judges can be told to put all these people in jail, and nothing's going to happen. They're just going to go to jail.
I have to disagree, and of course in Montana they've got a sovereignty movement there going very strong. Even in this state of Washington, where I'm at right now, the state of Washington, we used to call it the socialist state of Washington. They had Senator Jackson and his kind. It was very, very liberal, and. And we've got a governor that thought she was a liberal, but she's kind of getting quite an education right at the moment because they had a $2 billion deficit here 2 years ago, and they've been trying to figure out how they can make it up. And I'll tell you, state legislators are getting a well of an education because their constituents back home are studying the Federal Reserve business, what the bankers are doing to us. And so there's over 20 states that are have passed or about to pass sovereignty resolutions. And this
Red,
is something...
That's not going to do,
educating what's
okay,
what it's
gentlemen,
doing
we
educating.
Need one person at a time.
I'm having trouble hearing him.
Red, can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
The problem with that is the current situation is that they're the government de facto, meaning that they're the current state in power, and that state is underneath the jurisdiction of Congress. They have no standing whatsoever as a territorial state to do any of those things. So that's just going to fall by the wayside, or they may even put it in as a big do thing, but it's never going to correct the problem we have with the fictitious paper money that we have.
Well, I the paper money thing, South Carolina is talking about going back to gold and silver coin as required by the Constitution. And this stuff, it's like chicken pox in a first grade classroom. It's contagious. And, it's a matter of education. We have to educate our fellow Americans. And this
Red,
is what I've been about for all these years.
Red, just like South Carolina, they don't have standing to go to gold, silver, or anything because they're only a territorial state. Until people understand that, they won't understand the big picture and what has to be happening. Because
Steve, I doubt that half of our listeners have a clue what you mean by territorial state. So I would certainly like to hear a clear explanation of that.
Okay. The territorial states like Puerto Rico, they are a territory underneath Congress. Congress provides them with everything they can and cannot do. They have no rights whatsoever. They're a possession of the federal government. And if it was still under the lawful government, pre-1861, then the people would own everything that's going on in Puerto Rico or Guam or any of the other territorial states, which is the same definition that's in the tax code under 3121E. It defines the states as Puerto Rico and the other entities that are territorial states, and those people do not have the same rights as the people pre-1861 had in the states, sovereign states, that created the states, that created the union, that created the federal government at that point, which was lawful at that point. After 1860s and the Reconstruction Act of 1869 and 67, they recreated, went out to each of the states, like Missouri, for example, placed a second constitution in place, which created a new state over top of the lawful state, did not replace the lawful state, and started a new government by the different entity of people that controlled the government at that point under martial law. And on my front page, the very first one after You Be the Judge and Jury is a Supreme Court judge from Utah that talks about the 13th, 14th Amendment were not lawfully passed because, again, he didn't understand that it was a government de facto and that they could do anything they wanted to, just like the 16th Amendment or the 17th Amendment. Those were not lawfully passed by the constitutional mandates of the lawful government. So, therefore, it's all was done under sedition, and if we notify them of those facts, and they don't change it, they have 30 days to respond to us one way or another, or then it becomes a treasonous act by the people in power today. Because they need to restore the lawful government, because the government de facto, which is defined in Black's Law Dictionary, which is also found in my web pages under which dictionary you want to use, says that once restored, meaning the lawful government can be restored at any time as the people want to do that. And United States citizens as being territorial citizens from D.C. that are out here in the 50 states don't have standing, because that's what the tax code did to it. Did that explain that, Terry?
I think so. You know, somebody had mentioned in here, you know, about the 14th and the fact that it's not constitutional, it's not properly ratified, you know, it should be null and void. Unfortunately, it's not treated as null and void because it's being handled in a de facto fashion.
That's because it's under the government de facto. It is lawful under that. Just like every action of the governors, the states, the judges and the President of the United States are all lawful actions today because they're all operating under the government de facto. We have no standing to stop, petition, to do any of them because they're allegedly under the government de facto doing the best thing for the people. But it's only the citizens of the United States that they're actually doing this for, not the people as the sovereign citizens of the several states. That's the big conspiracy that John F. Kennedy talked about. And most of the presidents talked about in their farewell addresses, like George Washington said, be leery of the parties. Be fearful of the foreign entities. And then what Rothschild's family said about, we don't care who writes the laws as long as we got the right to print the money. I mean, that's all connected into this conspiracy of the system that overlays everything with the new territorial states on top of the lawful states, and then we got a 10 district states over top of that again, and here before long we're going to have the North American Union with Mexico, Canada, and the United States again over top of the whole thing. It's just a one big conspiracy where the people don't have any rights whatsoever other than what the government wants to give them, and they only do that to keep them happy. I think at this point in our lives, most people are unhappy, you know, with 12 million people losing their houses over the last 5 or 6 years, and most of these people losing their jobs and the unemployment it is today, they're ready for action. The problem is the only solution is common law. Construct the notices so that we restore the lawful state governments and the lawful federal government. Any other actions whatsoever is useless. Fighting the IRS is like fighting a branch of the root of the tree. We need to go after the root of the tree and get rid of it and replant the lawful state government so that we can get back our standing and our lawful rights. There's nothing else that's worked for the last 20 years as far as I've seen. Now, I understand what Red's done. I've done some of the similar things back in 97, 98, but I figured out there was no way that we can need, even if the IRS was closed yesterday, it wouldn't mean one cent of anything, because we would still have a problem with the Federal Reserve, we'd still have a problem with the government de facto, and they continue to keep us in wars, sending our young kids off to war and killing them, and also adulterating our water, our food, everything, our health, because of what I understand your relative, Norman Dodd, explained by the tax-free foundations that supposedly changed the history books. I'm pretty sure they changed the laws, the instructions of the attorneys, and also the medical professions do not know what health means today. You go to France, most of those people over there are not overweight because they eat properly. And they give vitamins and stuff by doctors rather than giving them drugs like they're doing here. There's only three nations in this world that get sodium fluoride put in their drinking water, and that's Britain, Canada, and the United States. The rest of them all think we're crazy. And about time the people out here learn that our problem is the government de facto, not the president that's currently there, because he's doing the best he can. Maybe he doesn't know about the government de facto, and it's just like John F. Kennedy learned about the government de facto. And the next day after his speech, he should have got up and started explaining the system to the people at that point and been on the TV from night until dark and the next day until everybody understood it completely. And he most likely wouldn't have gotten killed, because then he'd gone public and there would be no reason for him to get killed. Okay?
Well, he was talking about, he started speaking out against the Federal Reserve, against secret societies, and signed that executive order where he was actually issuing government-printed certificates, silver certificates.
Well, this happened 2.5 years, the speech about the system happened 2.5 years before all that happened. He talked about the system. And if he knew the system like I know the system today, he should have got on the TV and explained it to all the people that we're all being duped. Do you understand the system?
Pretty much.
I'm sorry, I used to be a Series 7 licensed stockbroker. The stock market's rigged. Everything out there is rigged to the point where there's layers and layers and layers of people that have been created jobs that are not needed to create for us to have clean food and clean water. And that goes on for every industry out there.
Well, we've got a guy in our queue by the name of John from Texas, and I'm hoping that Janet will give him a live mic, and We're gonna be up against a break here in about 2 minutes, but I want to bring John on so that he can kind of join in this discussion with us. Steve, I think I may have mentioned John to you. John is down in Austin,
right?
And be good for you guys to have some interaction as well. Maybe even if you can get together down there when you're through that territory. John has a lot of experience and background and knowledge about the chemtrails, and also regarding a bit of the situations that you and Red have been talking about as far as the tax situation. But also John has information and knowledge regarding the Bilderberger Perry down there. And John, I'm gonna let you introduce yourself here and say hello to Steve and Red.
Hello, Steve.
Yes.
Quite frankly, I was listening to what you were saying, and you're very right with what you're saying too. There's no doubt that they have systematically tried to poison this population and to disregard anything that would be lawful. There's no doubt at all. I take it you're from the Texas area yourself, also.
No, I'm over the Park, Kansas.
Oh, okay. I was talking to Terry earlier today, and he said that you're in the Texas region, at least at present. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm down here on vacation.
Oh, okay. Excellent. Anyways, yeah, welcome to the land of chemtrails, and where we fluoride everything now. It wasn't enough to take fluoride and make rat poison out of it. Now we have a good case for people poison.
Well, do you know why they did that, don't you, John?
Well, I've heard several different angles on that. One is that it being a waste byproduct of the manufacturing of aluminum, they used they had a hazardous waste problem and put it into the drinking water to get rid of their hazardous waste, but I really don't think that's the real cause or reason behind it.
Let me tell you, John.
Yeah.
The reason, it was industrial waste. They couldn't bury it in any one place because it most likely would get in the water supply and kill everybody in a half of a state or whatever.
Right.
They couldn't dump it in the ocean because it would kill all the vegetation and fish and everything else in that area.
Yeah.
And therefore, they decided that, well, we got to get rid of this stuff. So they were going to disperse it 4 parts per million in drinking water because they knew that that wouldn't kill us all tomorrow. And now they actually lowered that to 2 parts per million because they started forcing all the food manufacturers to put 2 parts per million in everything they produce. So in other words, that little orange juice bottle has 2 parts per million of sodium fluoride in it, which is that rat poison.
Yes, I agree with what you're saying. In fact, I have seen evidence of that per se.
That wasn't still enough that they started putting it in this jet stream up there, and I don't have proof of that, to disperse it out over the whole land, and I think there's a lot of animals dying from it.
Oh, certainly there is. In fact, the honeybees here in Central Texas are almost non-existent.
Most likely it's caused from that, but again, we need a lot of testing done on that.
Yes, yes. Well, they're definitely, we definitely have mad men in control, and I think it's the usual suspects that we look at, but I think it goes a lot deeper than that, too. There are so many people involved in that, and of course, I find the Council on Foreign Relations to be a totally repulsive group of individuals because it has such people as George Bush and Dick Cheney and David Rockefeller, who have systematically set us up for a kill.
You know, John.
Yes.
John, I do believe that most of those people are in the dark about all the bad things that are going on. I really do. Because the fact is that there's people out there that are being told to do these things. They don't even know that the sodium fluoride is bad for us.
I understand.
And so therefore, they're operating with this big layer and layer and layer, and when you get clear up in the top where you get the Rothschilds, those are the only ones that know what's going on. I even talked to a CIA agent that was retired about the Gulf War illness.
Yes.
And that's the evidence I had about that being as contagious, and he about turned white, and then the meeting was over, and he hasn't talked to me since because he says that they're doing that now. It's like he already knew about that by the black ops of the CIA.
Right.
Now, the black ops are being paid big money, and they're doing it for a reason.
Yes.
And, yeah, those people need to be indicted.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Well, and you guys, H.W. Bush and Kissinger and Rumsfeld and those guys, you realize that Rumsfeld was the one that they put in as the head of the company so that they could get aspartame approved.
Absolutely.
After it had been turned down?
Absolutely.
I mean, we got a lot of people up there. They know full well what they're doing.
You bet.
I agree with that. I'm just saying that the people underneath them that are being told have good jobs, and they said, if you don't do this, you're going to lose your job, your home, your family, and everything else, and then what do? You choose.
I do understand that. That's like the spray program. The way it works here in Texas, at least the way I understand, and I know kind of firsthand as to how the jets are provided to the state of Texas, for the spraying program, but the chemicals are provided by the state of Texas. Obviously, somebody has provided to Texas, but what happens is The U.S. Air Force provides the jets for the chemtrail program. The state of Texas provides the chemicals so that you have plausible deniability and you have people that don't know how to put both ends together. However, there's always somebody who has the controlling understanding and knowledge as to what they're doing.
That's true. I agree with that. 100%. We need to get all these groups together, like Red Beckman's group and all the other groups, working on reinstalling the lawful state government so that all the people have standing. Therefore, everything would stop. There would be no court cases against them, no IRS, nothing.
And yes, well,
all the people could operate under CAFRI accounts.
There is something that I did want to say, and I really don't want to change the subject because I do like where you guys are at on this, but I've been asking people everywhere in Central Texas if they voted for Rick Perry, because as we've all heard, Rick Perry won by a landslide to be the Republican nomination, and I've yet to find one person, not even one person that I know of, who has voted for Rick Perry. And I think we're back down to our good old-fashioned black box voting issues again. And I think we have a case of the fox watching the hen house. And, of course, the Bilderbergers are the ones that stand behind Rick Perry and his programs and his plans, because they're the ones that have placed him in the position he's in.
And Red, you want to tell him your story?
And the only solution Red,
are you gonna take that break you were supposed to take?
No, we're going to take it at the half hour. Red, you want to tell him your story?
Which one?
When you ran for governor and how the votes turned out.
In 1988.
Well, I got a question of John. I got a question.
It's directly related to what John just said, and I want Red and John to be able to just affirm what John just said. Let Red tell his story. We'll come back to him.
Well, I ran for governor in Montana in 1988, and as I remember, there was five candidates on the I always run as a Democrat. If you're going to run for office, don't run as an independent. Run as a Democrat. That's where the fun is. You can have more fun in the Democrats than any place. And of course, the press they said, "Well, you're not a Democrat. You're a libertarian or something. You ought to be running as an independent." And I tell them, I say, "Well, I'm a Jeffersonian Democrat. You have your Jefferson Jackson Donkey Day dinners, and you recognize that Jefferson was a Democrat. Well, I'm a Jeffersonian Democrat, and I agree with Tom Jefferson's political philosophies. I liked what he had to say." I said, "If you don't like Tom Jefferson's belief system, what he believed, I said, then I have to assume that you're a Karl Marx Democrat. And if you want some fun, you go and get in on a Democratic Donkey Day dinner someplace and talk about Jeffersonian Democrats and Karl Marx Democrats." And I ran for governor. The fellow that won the primary, his campaign staff called me the morning of the primary and told me that their poll showed me winning that primary that day. And they said, "We like the way you explain things and what you believe, and if you win, we want to be available for your campaign because we like what you have to say." I came in fourth out of fifth, out of five. And the guy that won, there was so much vote fraud. And we documented it. We documented it very carefully. The one county, about 10,000 people signed in at the polls to vote. And there was over 11,000 votes counted. And there was only about 10,000 that signed in. In other words, there was a 10% pad there that somebody had been dumping into the boxes, and so nothing happened. We tried to do something about it with the Secretary of State, but he was part of the problem. And
right.
So I know all about this vote fraud. You'd have thought that Montana would be one place where you wouldn't have to worry about vote fraud, but it turned out that Montana was as bad or worse than Chicago. So that's a game that's been going on for a long time, and it's a game that's going to have to be corrected at some point. But we've got lots and lots of those kind of things happening.
Well, I'm starting to believe that Texas is worse than Chicago myself. I mean, we have vote fraud everywhere.
I'm sure. I think it's in every state. I don't think there's any state out there that doesn't have this machine working behind the scenes to do these kind of things. But if you want some fun, you just start calling them Karl Marx Democrats, and you'll get quite a reaction, I'll guarantee you.
John?
Yes.
Did you know about President Tilden?
Pardon me?
Do you know who President Tilden was, elected President of the United States in 1875?
No, I didn't.
He got the electoral votes and the public votes, and won the election, and all the newspapers declared him president, yet the next March or January when they installed him, he wasn't installed as the president.
Really?
Really? Yep. So this has been going on for a long time, people. And
absolutely.
It's because of the government de facto. If we don't restore the state lawful governments, nothing's ever going to change. It's been going on for hundreds of years. So, gentlemen, you need to find my web pages, read, understand common law, and know that that's the only solution to our problems today. And we need to unite all the different groups out there to this situation so that we can get on with our lives, because anything else is not going to work.
I disagree with that. I disagree with that. I'll tell you why. Let me tell you why. We've got groups all over this country. And that's the strength of this whole thing, is the fact that we're coming at them from so many angles, and if you have just one angle, you're a dead duck. They're gonna overwhelm you. But if they're being hit front, back, and side, and top and bottom, they're being hit from every angle in this country right now. And we've got all these people coming out of the woodwork that are they're dedicated, they're committed, and they're patriotic Americans, and they're making a difference. You're just one. I'm one. And I can name a whole host of others around this country. And if they all go together, you're not going anyplace, I'll guarantee you.
Well, Terry, I've got to run. Thank you very much for the time and effort you put into this meeting tonight. And anybody can contact me by going to my web pages and go to the second one on You Be the Judge and Jury. You'll find my email address. And if you want to call me, my telephone number's there also. Other than that, I have to say thank you very much and hang up because my wife's calling me.
Thank you very much.
And I appreciate you coming on very much. Steve.
Yes.
Steve?
Yes?
Where are you guys at in Texas, if you don't mind me asking?
We're down in South Padre.
South Padre? I understand. I know the area well. Well, it's been very nice hearing from you. Enjoyed it very much. Hope you have a wonderful evening. And I'll talk to Terry further if you get a chance while you're down here in Texas. Get in touch with me.
Very good. Terry, send him an email. He's giving my telephone numbers, and he can call me anytime.
Sounds
good.
Will
do. I'll pass the information on.
I appreciate it.
Okay. Terry, nice meeting you, Red.
Nice to meet you. Keep up the good work.
I will. Bye.
Good night.
Bye. Red?
Yeah.
How about letting the folks understand what your objections were to some of the things that because there was obviously a rub there. Steve has had his experience. You've had your experience. I suspect yours is, you know, got a few more years behind it. And you've watched what happens when certain people get going down a certain path. I think it's fair to let the listeners really have a little bit better detailed perspective of what your concerns are about some of this.
I'm confronted with someone who has a particular plan of attack against the system. They might be a little off base, and I'm not saying that Steve is off base at all. I'm not saying that. I'm glad he's there. I'm glad that he is there because this whole scheme, this whole conspiracy is so massive. You're not going to disable it with one bullet. It's not going to work because it's so massive. And that's why I say you don't try to get everybody under one umbrella because it isn't going to work. We've had people trying to do that for the last 30 years, people who would come to the conferences and such and say, well, we've all got to get together. We've got to have a united attack. And those people fall by the wayside every time. I've seen it happen. We're in a war, and we've got the numbers. We outnumber them. It's just that we've got so many people on our side that are not up to speed mentally. They haven't got this all figured out yet.
Right.
But I'll tell you, there's people, there's things happening every day in this country where people are waking up and they're stirring their bones, and they're getting active. Just look at what has happened with the Tea Parties and the Oath Keepers and all these different organizations. And, of course, I'm so familiar with the Fully Informed Jury Association. And they're having the greatest results right now that they've ever had. They've been in business since 89. Excuse me. And they're not having the struggle to have the finances and such to fight the war, the battle at the front that they're on. They have never had the resources that are at their disposal today, because people are saying, hey, here is a program that we need to invest in, and they're getting some fabulous return on what they invest in that organization, because they're putting out some of the best information. Those brochures that they have out there on gun control and there's a whole bunch of them. Of course, on the Federal Reserve, they've got brochures on the grand juries, and it's just a tremendous amount of education material. Because what we're talking about here is such a lack of truth for people to access, and so it takes education. You've got to reach these people. They're right now. They're struggling, and they're hearing everything. Their facilities, their mental facilities, are sharper right now than they were when they had their good jobs and plenty of money. I joke about it. Of course, I say that before they didn't hear what we were saying, but now their hearing is so much better. And you can educate people right today that you couldn't reach even 2 years ago. You can reach them today. You can get to them, and because they all know there's something wrong. They all know that this system in this country, the political system, is falling apart, and they know it, and they want to know how they can be involved in making the proper corrections. And so this is what it's all about, and we just need we need more Steves. Red Beckman, somebody else is going to have to step into his shoes because he's not going to last forever. But there's no question in my mind that there'll be people there to do what has to be done. Excuse me. But you know, where we didn't hear anything of Steve and his group until just recently. Now, I think that they have been working on this for quite some time, perhaps. But they're like everybody else. They're finding now that people want to hear what they have to say. And this is reason for encouragement. We need to encourage people. We need to, you know, get across to people that pessimism is not a good way to live. It's no fun being a pessimist. It's a lot better to be an optimist and be a participant in doing the things that that give us hope for the future. And so I'm you know, sure, I probably sound just a little bit upset, but don't get me wrong, because I have gone through this with so many over the years, and of course, you know, we've had some organizations. You had an organization right there in Denver where you're at, Terry, a number of years ago, and I knew the fellow that started the organization, and I told him, I said, don't do it, and he was building an organization. And he said, well, why? And I said, you are going to be infiltrated. There will be agents, government agents, that will be in your organization. And the day they opened their doors for an office in Denver, Colorado, they had an infiltrator right in the office. And everybody that got involved with that organization went on a special list with the Internal Revenue Service and the federal government. And there were a lot of people that went to jail. They lost their farms. They lost their homes. They lost their families because they tried to bring people under this umbrella, and it didn't work. In Portland, Oregon, people went to jail because they branched out. They tried to branch out. Pat Shannon was in Atlanta, Georgia. He spent 140-some days in jail before he got to trial. And he won his case, and because he defended himself and he had a jury, and he was able to communicate with that jury. And this is 20 years ago. And so I've seen too many, you know, situations where people were talked into, you know, becoming part of an organization. The Your Heritage Protective Association in Southern California, there was over 25,000 dues-paying members back in the in the 70s, late 70s and early 80s. And I don't know how many people in that organization went to jail, and the government seized quite a bit of money, gold and silver and such, and a lot of people got hurt. And so my organization, I don't have a group. My group consists of my wife and I. And that's it. And I'm not, I've never let this thing get any farther than that. I've had lots of organizations that wanted to use my name and such. And I say, no, you're not going to use my name because I don't know what you're doing. I can't control what you're doing. I don't want to control what you're doing. And so let's hit them from as many angles as we can, because we want the establishment, we want the conspiracy to know that there's a lot of us out here, and we're fighting mad, and we're not going to let them get away with this country by default. We just about did. We come awful close here. And of course, I think the federal God is, I call the federal government the federal God. I think it's going to go down. I think that I don't think it can survive its mistakes. And I'm not alone on this. You remember when we had the attorney Steve Pigeon on about 6 months or so ago? You remember that, Terry?
Yes, I do.
And Steve Pigeon said the federal government is going to go. He was convinced at that time, and I think he still is, that the federal government is going to go down. And, of course, I say it's going to go down because they're in violation of the first and second commandments that God gave us. And they're not just violating our Constitution and our Bill of Rights. They're violating God's law. And that's why I'm an optimist, because I know that my God is a winner. He is not a loser. And we're seeing some repentance across this country. I said it for a long time that nothing good was going to happen in this country until we saw some repentance. I didn't think we were going to see any repentance until we had an economic holocaust in this country. And that's where we're at today. It's happening right now as we speak. So I better shut up and let somebody else talk for a bit. But I just hope that if you've got an idea out there and you know how to communicate your idea, go to it. You don't limit yourself and don't limit anybody else. Just get with the program.
Well, John, you've been listening to Red there. What's your reaction to what Red said?
Oh, man. Number one, I can see exactly what Red's saying about the danger of trying to take this all on from one perspective. I don't think there's any way you can take it on from one perspective either. And it is large, and it is very conspiratorial in nature. And the powers to be have been practicing this conspiracy for a long time and have put a lot of things into place to try to thwart us at every turn in the road. The Internal Revenue Service, I think, has been a lapdog for the social elite that really want to eliminate a great portion of us due to the way that they go about things and the way that they have perceived that they are manipulating the general public and the general masses. And I agree with what Red's saying, that God himself is not mocked. He knows what he's doing. These guys won't get away with what they're doing. However, there will come a time, as God says in his word, that we're going to face some unparalleled times, and I think that's around the corner here too. So, I mean, I'm
John,
not quite
can
a,
you hang in with us
yeah.
for the last half hour? We're going to take a quick break, but can you hang in here with us?
You bet.
Super. We'll be right back in just a few minutes, folks. Welcome back to Walls in Our Minds. Apparently that audio did not play, so we had a little bit of dead air time there, but that's okay. We'll just move right ahead. Red, are you there?
I'm here.
You know, we've had a lot of people come on this show and give us silver bullets. And I've been to a lot of Patriot meetings where people presented silver bullets. And, you know, we've made a commitment on this show to try to educate people to break down the walls in their minds so that they can begin to recognize that they're not just dependent upon the ballot box to make a difference in their lives. And they don't have to wait till an election cycle to stand up for their rights and understand the Constitution and to put forth ideas and actions that will make a difference on a daily basis, monthly basis, weekly basis in their lives. You know, I think I'm afraid that Steve may have actually got a little offended, and I'm sorry for that because, you know, I've learned a tremendous amount from you, Red, and I guess to some extent the reason that I have is because I've been patient enough to hear you out, and I just want to tell you how much I respect what you pass on here on this show. Because it's a lot of experience and you care about people and you don't want people going out there and getting burned. And, you know, think of all the people that we've had on here. A lot of them have had really strong ideas. But for the people that are out there, the common person, to go out there and to take this stuff and to use it, to put it into play, is not that easy for people. They don't have the courage to go stand up to a court and tell him you don't have jurisdiction or tell a judge that he's a government agent. It's just a challenge. It's a challenge to go back. Like we said, we've been sabotaged. We have been ambushed by, call it the shadow government, call it the tax-free foundations that Steve was talking about, my great-great-uncle or whoever he was, Norman Dodd, that had told people about the, you know, he was a congressional investigator with the Reese Commission and found out that the tax-exempt foundations had a conspiracy that he confirmed to take over our education system. We've got to back out of this ambush the same way we came in. People got to recognize that they've been believing lies for all their life, basically. That's a tough pill to swallow. They got to recognize that they've been lied to from the pulpit in their schools, you know, that our judiciary is totally corrupt today, that you know, so many of these verdicts that have gone down have been because of the stupidity of the jurors to not recognize that they had every right to judge the law, not just the facts of the case. I wish we were able to talk to a couple hundred million people to pass this information on to them. Yet the mainstream media, that those outlets are pretty much locked up and consumed by this, you know, the international banksters, basically. John, would you like to share the story about your buddy Dacey and what's going on down there with his studio?
Sure. Bob Dacey, who was running a very successful television program here in the Austin area, and was very successful in exposing a lot of the things that were going on nationally and internationally, and actually he had been a very, very effective reporter in front of presidents and vice presidents, and it actually exposed some of the things that the Bushes had been up to and some of the other leaders who have created difficulties and issues for this country and for the people of this country. Time Warner, who has been in charge of that studio and was given that studio charge by the city of Austin, took and said, look, we have to renovate your studio in order to accommodate other people and other things and other programs. And so what they did is they moved him out of that whole environment, started this renovation of the studio, a studio renovation that apparently will never be finished, and they have kept Dacey out of the studio, and they have sidestepped him because he was out there really putting truth in front of people. And it's really a shame to see how that was all handled and how that was manipulated, but that is your all-seeing eye and your all-hearing ear, which is Time Warner Communications. And they effectively put him out of business for basically telling the truth. And that's at least what I've seen. That's what I've observed. And up to this date, he has not been back in that studio, and that whole renovation has taken place over the course of over a year. Now, to renovate those studios typically can be done in weeks. I am a building contractor with many years of experience where that studio sat and the environment of that studio. Within several weeks, they could have had that back up and running, had it refreshed, and had it ready to go. And Time Warner chose to make sure that he could not effectively get back on the air again. And that's what they've done to Bob Dacey, amongst others.
Now, what was his affiliation with Alex Jones?
Well, Alex Jones, on a very frequent basis, would bring Bob Dacey into the studio. Bob Dacey's been in a lot of the different videos and movies and stuff of that nature that Alex has produced. And Bob Dacey's been a very effective force for exposing various government agencies and entities and the way that they have performed these very rogue operations and how they have done harm for the whole nation. And he's also the one that exposed George Bush Jr. In front of the nation, in front of cameras, when it came to some of the 9/11 stuff. So he's been a very outspoken individual and has been very precise in his handling of reporting, and did a very, very good job. So I don't know if the powers to be in Austin would ever allow him back on the tube again, because he was exposing the rats and the cockroaches. And we have plenty of those in government here in Central Texas. So that's
well, Red, you heard what I said. I want to give you an opportunity to.
Well, I think you did a very good job of analyzing the situation. What John is talking about there has been repeated over and over and over. I think I have mentioned about one radio station here in this country, 50,000 watt, a very powerful station. It's 20 years ago. Almost. It is 20 years ago. There was a lot of talk on that 50,000 watt station, a lot of talk radio. It had worked very well for them, and they the different talk show hosts, they started zeroing in and exposing the Internal Revenue Service for some of their some of the things that they were doing. And one of the head honchos, the big names in the, I should say, the hierarchy of the IRS, went out to the station and talked to the manager, and he said, I want you to get your staff together. I want to talk to your staff. And the manager was not very smart. and because he should have set a trap for this IRS big shot, but he didn't. And so he called a meeting of the staff, and as I remember, there was about 40 people. This was a very strong station, and he got them all together, and this fellow from the IRS came, and he told them, he said, "You've been talking about the IRS, and you've been, very negatively about the IRS," and he said, "You either tone it down. If you don't, we'll audit every single one of you." That's all he told them. And there wasn't a one on that staff that had guts to give him a, to challenge him. They weren't that well informed and all, and so that station, the management told the people that were involved, "No more. You're not talking about the Internal Revenue Service. We're not going to take a chance on being audited." Irv Homer, he was a talk show host back on the East Coast. He was either in Baltimore or Philadelphia. I don't remember which. I think it was Baltimore. He was a very popular talk show host back there. And he was on for a couple hours right at noon. And his rating was very high. It was a strong station. They had good coverage in five states. And the same thing happened. He started discussing the IRS and such. I was on there a couple of times. And then everything went silent. And I found out that the station manager had been told, "You've got to shut Irv Homer down. You've got to have him quit, or you're all going to be audited." And, of course, management told Irv Homer that he had to quit, talking about the IRS and having anti-IRS guests. And Irv had been on that program for, I think, over 15 years when I was on there. And when he come close to his retirement, then he started again. He went, and started doing the same thing again. And he had me on, and we had orders for between 70 and 80 copies of The Law That Never Was off of one program. And I was able to communicate with him. And, of course, he had been just seething all those years where he was not able to, he didn't have the freedom to talk about the things that he wanted to, but he wanted to get his retirement, and which he did. But this is going on all over this country. The IRS has been doing this, and this is criminal. This is bad, a terrible thing that the IRS has done. And I have no love, I have no respect for those people, because I know a great deal about them, and they're satanic as far as I'm concerned. Any organization that would promote that kind of business, they're not honest, they're not patriotic, they're a bunch of thieves. And they're worse than the guy that goes into a bank with a handgun and robs a bank. They're much worse because of the evil that they do to bring about their plunder of the American people. So, John, your friend there, he's just one of many in this country that are getting hurt when they try to tell the truth.
Oh, yes, there's no doubt. We recently had that plane crash here in in Austin, and one of the gentlemen that I work with pointed out to me. He said, I don't think that guy was trying to hurt anybody, because he actually crashed it at the base of the building. And, of course, what flew into the building itself was parts of the aircraft. He was trying to send them a message because they were constantly harassing him. But that's nothing new for such organizations as Internal Revenue Service, because they are their own hit organization. They thrive on people being disturbed and distraught, and they prey on that. And this is a very repressive organization, which is a collection agency for the banks, for the international banking community. And not only are they a collection agency for them, but as you've well noted before, that our Federal Reserve will give away billions and trillions of dollars and then put the burden on the taxpayers of America and call that good. So it's all right to give away trillions of dollars and throw it on the backs of the taxpayers, and that's fine. Well, that's not fine. That's not a worthy system. In fact, it's not even right what they do, because it never was lawful to do what they did. They stole it by force, and they continue to steal by force. And that's what I see that organization doing. And it's an organization, and it's not even what I consider of any lawful need whatsoever. And
it's a criminal.
It's a criminal
syndicate.
Yes, it is. Very well put. Anyways, Red, I think that you've done a very good job and a very good service by exposing these gangsters. And I think they really are gangsters in every sense of the word. In fact, they're trained as gangsters. They're trained to prey on people's fears. They're trained to go out and deceive. And they know full well what sort of organization they are, because the heads of these organizations, if you even try to go so far as to even record them, they will not allow you to do that in fear that they'll be trapped in their own words.
The sad part about it is that here we are coming up to April 15th, and every church in this country prior to April 15th, almost without exception, the pastor will have a sermon on render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. This is years ago. We were going to a small church, a community church, in a rural area, basically. And there was a small boy that was kind of a misfit in a way, but he was part of the Sunday school. And, of course, he grew up there in that community. And he went away to school. I don't remember exactly what he majored in, but he went to work right from college. He went to work for the Internal Revenue Service. And one of my son-in-laws had him in a Sunday school class or something, and knew him, and that he was IRS. And one time this kid had been in the IRS for several years, and so he was in the area where my son-in-law and daughter were at, and so he stopped in and visited. And my son-in-law kind of got on him a little bit about going to work for the Internal Revenue Service and all, and this guy, he proceeded to tell him that he was just doing what he is supposed to do, that we're supposed to pay our taxes, and he had quite a lingo that he used to justify what he was doing, and my son-in-law kind of got on his case a little bit, and the guy made a comment, and my son-in-law never forgot it. This guy told my son-in-law, he said, "Render unto Caesar that which is Caesar," and such. And he said, "When I walk through that door, coming to a place to audit their books or whatever," he said, "I represent the Lord Jesus Christ." My son-in-law never forgot it. And this is the kind of brainwashing, you see, that is so dangerous. He got this when he was going to church as a lad, because he heard these sermons about render unto Caesar. And then when he gets in the Internal Revenue Service, he is brain damaged some more, because they say, well, we've got to collect this money. The government has to have this money. And so this is the mental cripples that are being made, and it's not just the IRS. It's these mental cripples are coming out of the churches and such, and they feel like they're justified. They're doing what they're supposed to do.
Right.
The preacher preaches on the render unto Caesar. He preaches on the fact what is taught in Romans 13 that we're to be subject. This is absolute. You know, this is criminal what they're doing. To be subject to the government, that makes you a slave.
Mm-hmm.
Our government was to be subject to us.
Correct.
Our presidents, our Congress were to be subject to the Constitution for the United States of America, and they're subject to God's law. We the people were to be only subject to God's law. That's all. If men create a law that's in compliance with God's law, fine. We need to live by those. But we need to judge the man-created law as to whether it is in compliance with God's law.
Yes. Well, what they did is they devised a way to enslave a nation.
Yes.
And through the Internal Revenue Service, they created a chain of fear. And they did not need that money.
Yeah.
They created a situation where they created the money out of thin air, and then they wanted to enslave the population. And at whim, they wanted to be able to take from all men and to enslave all men and to create a system of fear. And God's not the author of fear.
Yeah. Christ said, know the truth. In John, the 8th chapter, he says, know the truth. And the truth will make you free. And that is a message that we need to be putting out there. Know the truth, and the truth will make you free.
Well, it sure doesn't seem to be very truthful the way it's set up now, does it?
No, it isn't. It's as vile, it's as evil. It could get worse, and it probably will.
Mm-hmm.
As these satanic forces lash back, and they will, because, you go to Revelation's 12th chapter, and it tells you that Satan is cast out of heaven, and it says he knows his time is short.
Yes.
And I think we're in that time frame right now where he knows his time is short. He's running out of time.
Yes. I believe that to be true also.
Terry, where did you go to?
I'm just listening to you guys. You're having an excellent conversation, and I'm just letting you go because, I mean, it's good stuff, and it's absolutely right on. I mean, I just wish we could get the word out to enough people in this country that they would all take a stand. If we could get enough people just to stand up and to understand enough of this to recognize that we have the power, we do have the tools and the things that we need to straighten out this government. One thing that Steve said a while ago is that this could be straightened out very quickly. And it could if people would just stop believing the lies and take a stand and recognize that we've been duped. You know, they don't want to face this. It's painful for people. Change is painful for people. They'd rather, what's the saying in the that they'd rather continue to suffer? Was it out of the Declaration of Independence, isn't it? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
People will continue to suffer until it's less painful to act than it is not to act. That's the basic truth of it.
It says all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they have become accustomed. And then it goes on and it says, when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new safeguards for their future posterity, I think it is. I may have gotten the last word or so wrong there. But they were very articulate in their language. They were very good at their usage of the English language. They said it all. They said so much in just such a few words, and it was so lucid. You couldn't help but understand what they were saying.
Well, bottom line, Red. Without people having a backbone, and without people discussing these issues and bringing it in front of their faces, a lot of people do not want to see the truth. They do not want to hear the truth. And I think that's where part of that problem comes from. People are more inclined to ignore the truth. And that's what we're seeing over and over again. And I think that's the reason our country is in such a bad state right now, is because they've left it up to the elections. They said, well, you know, this person was elected, when in many cases they were not. And I think that's what we're seeing here, at least in Texas. People just throw up their hands and say, well, what can I do? You know? We could be doing a lot, but we need to be talking about it. We need to be backing these people down. We need to stop this forward progress, this forward aggression from these guys and the evil that they do. And I mean, it will not happen if people sit on their hands.
Yeah.
People need to be talking about it. People need to be discussing those issues. I know the way our government works and our media works, they don't want any of that discussed. And, of course, our president now is trying to make it a hate crime to discuss or to talk about any political figures. Well, that's just setting the table for true and complete tyranny, in my book.
Well, that's their goal, because that is Satan's goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, my God is bigger than that. And as we see repentance in this country, and it's coming. We had that great testimony from Dr. Kate here a few weeks ago. And I see it every day. I'm hearing about it, and I just I'm thrilled to death with it. And we're going to, as things get more difficult and we get hammered a little harder, why, we're going to have a lot more people that are beyond our doorstep wanting to know the truth.
John, thanks for joining us tonight. Red, appreciate you. We'll be back next Thursday night, fans.
Have a good one.
Have a nice
evening.
Bye. All right, everyone.
Bye-bye.
What if the church, for heaven's sake, finally stepped up?
up to lead the way. Then maybe kids in school could play, and unborn children see light of day. What is the life that we pursue? Came from a hunger for the truth. What is the family turn to Jesus? Stopped asking Oprah what to do. What if his people prayed?
What if his people pray?